NBC Monitor News on the hour. Here's Neil Boggs.
First accounts say that more than 1,000 persons may have died in an earthquake disaster in Turkey. The greatest devastation is reported centered in an area 100 miles southeast of Istanbul. There, scores of towns and villages are said to have been leveled. Istanbul also felt the undulating shock waves, as did Ankara, the capital in central Turkey, and the western coastal city of Izmir and the Black Sea port of Samsun. There were two and perhaps three tremors closely spaced. Several buildings collapsed in Istanbul. One fatality is reported there, with several persons injured. There is no word yet on the extent of damage and casualties in the other cities. The sector which apparently was hit hardest is in northwestern Anatolia and its principal city of Adipazari, a city of about 40,000. There was violence this afternoon at the Negro Black Power Conference. The story from NBC newsman Lim Tucker in Newark, New Jersey.
Violence erupted at the Black Power Conference in Newark today. A group of about 25 club-wielding young black militants crashed into the afternoon press briefing, hollering, "Let's get them," and began attacking all the press and their equipment. The concentrated attack was made on the radio and television equipment. Most of it appeared smashed by the time the five-minute encounter was over. At least one reporter did not duck in time and was struck by one of the group. The attack seems to openly dispute the conference leader's claims that unity was being achieved at this meeting. One leader told me after the free-for-all, he was both sorry and glad to see it happen. He said he was not surprised, but maybe now the black militants have it out of their system. The press was not really surprised either. All during the conference, the black nationalists have harassed and threatened them. Today, they acted. Lem Tucker, NBC News in Newark.
Carl Sandburg, the poet and biographer of President Lincoln, died today at the age of 89. President Johnson issued a statement expressing the nation's sorrow. Through his writings, the president said, Sandburg gave the nation the truest and most enduring vision of its greatness. There is no end to the legacy he leaves us. Sandburg, who had won Pulitzer Prizes both for history and poetry, died at his farm in Flat Rock, North Carolina. Soviet Foreign Minister Gromyko has started home blaming the United States for the failure of the UN General Assembly to reach any formal conclusions on the Middle East situation. Though most member nations were of a mood to condemn alleged Israeli aggression, Gromyko claimed, the U.S. somehow managed to foil any action. Israeli Foreign Minister Abba Eban, as he left New York, said the countries of the Middle East much reached their own agreements on establishing peace. Three more Soviet warships, a cruiser and two destroyers, sailed through the Mediterranean today, moving through the Bosphorus Strait, apparently to join other Russian naval vessels which reached Middle East waters earlier. In Cairo, President Nasser prepared to address the Egyptian people tomorrow. His speech, breaking a six-week public silence by Nasser, is expected to outline what the Arab country's course will be now. Today, King Hussein of Jordan repeated his call for an Arab summit meeting, saying such a gathering is essential for development of a basic policy for the Arab nations. North Vietnam charged earlier this week that U.S. planes had bombed a dike near Hanoi and took a group of foreign newsmen to the site to show them the results of the alleged attack. Today, the Pentagon gave this reply.
This is Colonel Charles Burdick from the Department of Defense News Desk. Recent Hanoi broadcasts have claimed that United States aircraft have bombed dikes in North Vietnam. We are checking the specific allegations in these reports. If such damage did occur, it was accidental and unintentional.
Pentagon spokesman Colonel Charles Burdick. Former President Eisenhower's suggestion that the U.S. consider declaring war against North Vietnam is meeting strong bipartisan opposition in Congress. Critics view such a step as implying an all-out effort to destroy North Vietnam, an aim the administration has repeatedly disavowed. North Vietnam is claiming that despite almost daily U.S. air attacks, the country's agricultural and industrial output is on the increase. A report by the official North Vietnamese news agency says that for the first 6 months of this year, rice, the staple crop, was up an estimated 21%. A 10% rise was reported in North Vietnam's industrial production. President Joseph Mobutu of the Congo held a special cabinet meeting today, apparently to set an execution date for former Premier Moise Tshombe when he is returned from Algeria. However, there are reports Algeria may put Tshombe on trial before sending him back. The Congolese radio, hinting that Tshombe may not be put to death immediately, said he will first have to name those who plotted with him. The first meeting of the five-member special board, which President Johnson has assigned to try to settle the railway dispute, has been scheduled for Tuesday. A Washington visit for September 19th was announced for Italy's President Saragat as part of a three-nation trip. This is Neil Boggs, NBC News, Washington.
Listen again on the hour for NBC Monitor News.
News of the metropolitan area next on the Conversation Station, WNBC New York.
Sinatra, the naked runner. Sinatra, the naked runner. Sinatra, the naked runner, from Warner Brothers in Technicolor.
See the Naked Runner now playing at the Forum 47th and Murray Hill Theaters. The temperature in New York is 79 degrees and it is sunny. Here are the metropolitan area headlines. More violence and tension in New Jersey. In Englewood, the 10th New Jersey city to be hit by riots, quiet returned today after Mayor Austin Volk promised to meet with Negroes to hear their complaints about housing and recreation facilities. Last night, a roving band of Negro youths threw rocks and bottles at store windows and police. Adam Clayton Powell kept to himself in his Bahama Island retreat today and refused to discuss the flurry over reports he was preparing to return to New York. Powell sent a note to reporters saying he would not hold a news conference, despite earlier statements by associates that he would. The Harlem congressman was excluded from the House for misuse of federal funds, had been expected to return yesterday, but apparently changed his mind. He faces arrest for contempt of court in New York. Charging that the labor policy of the Albert Einstein College of Medicine is a throwback to the 19th century, the head of the Drug and Hospital Employees Union vowed today to defy a federal court order by striking against the school Monday morning. Leon Davis, president of Local 1199, said his union is ready to engage in continuous round-the-clock talks to avert a walkout at Einstein and three affiliated city hospitals, but that no negotiations have been scheduled by the college. The temperature again, 79 degrees in sunny Manhattan, partly cloudy, warm and humid tonight. That's the metropolitan news to this moment. Next from the NBC newsroom at 6 o'clock with Jeffrey Pond, bulletins at once. This is Bill Rippey reporting.
Hi-ho, hey-hey, chew your little troubles away. Hi-ho, hey-hey, chew Wrigley's spearmint gum. Work goes faster, smoother, too. Life seems brighter when you chew. Hi-ho, hey-hey, chew Wrigley's spearmint gum. Get some soon.
Don't move, just leave your dial now. Here's Monitor. Lean back and stay a while now. Here's Monitor.
Hello, this is Ed McMahon, your host for Monitor 67, where you keep in touch with the weekend scene. In just 2 minutes, we'll hear from a gentleman in Chicago who pays $1.12 for a dollar bill and makes a profit on it. First, another well-known moneymaker, the relaxed Dean Martin with In the Chapel in the Moonlight.
How I love to hear the organ in the chapel in the moonlight while we're strolling and I where roses entwine. How I love to hear you whisper in the chapel in the moonlight that the love light in your eyes forever will shine till the turn to ashes, till the organ turns to rust. If you never come, I'll still be there, till the moonlight turns to dust. in the chapel in the moonlight. As they sing, oh, promise me, forever be mine. To behold their celebration till the organ turns to rust.
If you never come, I'd still be there.
Till the moonlight turns to dust. How I love to hear the choir in the chapel in the moonlight as they sing, oh, promise me.
Mr. American Motors Rambler Dealer, you're the guy who sells compact cars at import prices.
Right.
You're trying to tell me something.
Welcome, customer. It's our way of dramatizing all the surprises you'll find here.
Gee, and the lollipop. What a surprise.
Wait till you see our cars like this Rebel.
Strawberry yet.
Here's what Tom McCahill of Mechanics Illustrated said.
There isn't a better intermediate-sized car sold in the U.S. today than the 1967 Rebel.
Was that McCahill?
Surprise! That was my son, the ventriloquist.
Oh, you must be very proud of him.
Yes, Tom McCahill is a most respected automotive expert. Now, look at the list price on this intermediate-sized Rebel. Well, I'm selling it for even less than that.
Don't do it, Dad. All he wants is a lollipop.
Get back in the box.
You're wasting your time, Dad. He's the third one today.
Back in the box. Back.
You can get your kind of deal on your kind of car at your American Motors Rambler dealer. Now, during surprise time.
If you have any old paper money around the house, it may be worth more than its face value. According to Chicago coin and currency dealer Leonard Stark, Mr. Stark was interviewed for a monitor by Dan Price.
Mr. Stark, what are the details behind this rather curious price for a dollar bill?
Well, Dan, we're not exactly paying $1.12 for any dollar bill. They must say silver certificate on the top. And they come in denominations of $1, $5, and $10. And we're paying 12% over face value. This is the strangest thing that's happened in the coin business in some time. Up until a week and a half ago, we've been telling everybody that all their silver certificates were worthless, that they could turn them into the bank, get interest on them. All of a sudden, we get a call from New York City telling us that a group of investors are interested in buying all of the $1 and $5 and $10 silver certificates that they can get.
Now, what are these gentlemen in New York going to do with the silver certificates once you turn them over to them?
Well, they plan to turn them into the Treasury Department, redeem them for silver, and sell them on the futures market at a higher price. They're willing to pay me a small commission for buying them for them, and then add 29 cents of their own money, because the silver costs $1.29 an ounce, plus they will be paying approximately $1.44 an ounce for it, and they hope to sell it at a profit on the futures market in silver. And believe me, it's caused quite a stir in the coin market.
Well, Mr. Stark, what possible chance do these fellows have of making a profit when they sell the silver on the silver market?
That's a good question, Dan. At the present time, they are going to make a profit. They're probably doing this. They're buying them for $1.44, $1.45, selling them on the futures market for approximately $1.60, and borrowing the money against that to purchase more, so that they're good for a profit of 15 cents on every ounce of silver they buy. And they can probably loan 90% on their money. And if the futures market holds up in silver, then these fellas stand to make a sizable amount of money. I will make a little, and everybody will make a little bit of money on it. I'm certain, and I hope, for Uncle Sam's sake, that they put a stop to this. But until they do, I'm happy to take my 4% commission.
What has been the response?
The response has been tremendous, Dan. I've purchased over $60,000 so far this week. I'm hoping to buy upwards of $1 million worth. I'm certainly trying very hard. I'm contacting everybody, every bank, everybody that I know that I thought might have silver certificates, and we'll be very happy to pay the $1.12 for all that anybody might bring me or send me.
Where do you get the money to pay for them?
Well, these people are paying me in front because I couldn't have this kind of money to put up for these silver certificates, so they're paying me in advance, and I'm giving the money out in cash in my store and shipping them as fast as I get them.
Are most of the people who bring money in small dealers?
Not dealers, but little people who have saved 12, 10, 15, 20 of these. The largest purchase that we've bought so far has been about $700, and the average purchase is about $35 or $40. The people thought someday, because the silver certificates were not being issued anymore, they better hold on to them, and they were very smart.
So, while we cannot hold out any hope for the Confederate dollar, which people have been urged to save for so long because the South was going to rise again, there apparently is a good deal of hope for the good old-fashioned silver certificate. So much hope, in fact, that Leonard Stark is paying $1.12 for some dollar bills. Mr. Stark is president of the Central Coin Mart in Chicago, and I am Dan Price, NBC News Chicago.
When is a dollar worth $1.12? When it's a silver certificate.
Excedrin headache number 81, the tourists.
Now, what would you like to do now, Lucille? The aquarium, the Bowery, or Chinatown?
Phew, it's hot.
Now, let's go down.
Sidewalk's hot.
Stand up.
Charlie, we've been up since 6. I'm tired.
Well, you can be tired at home. Lucille, New York is a summer festival.
Well, it may be a summer festival to you, but it's an Excedrin headache to me. I'm going back to the hotel.
Oh, Lucille, don't
I'm
be a poop.
I'm going to take 2 Excedrin tablets.
If you get Excedrin headaches, why take anything else but Excedrin, the extra strength pain reliever?
Newsmen covering the Black Power Conference in Newark have encountered violence. In 4 minutes, a report from one of the NBC newsmen who was present. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York. You've probably heard Hugh Downs on Monitor Radio tell you about a special summer hearing aid value. Right now, Zenith is introducing a new tiny hearing aid, the Carlisle. It's the smallest, slimmest eyeglass hearing aid Zenith has ever made. So slender, it's hard to believe there's a quality Zenith hearing aid in the Temple Bar. And you can probably use your present eyeglass frame fronts. So let Professional Hearing Aid Service, 705 Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, show you how inconspicuous a hearing aid can be. But do it now, because for a limited time only, they're offering a special introductory price on this tiny new Carlisle. And while you're there, see any of the other 18 Zenith Living Sound hearing aids. Now's the time to visit the Professional Hearing Aid Service at 705 Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, while the sounds of summer are on sale. You'll be glad you did.
At 18 minutes after the hour, this is Monitor 67. With the Charlie Colello Singers, Tulips from Amsterdam.
Thank you. This is Keenan Wynn.
Wynn.
Forgetting for a moment the controversy that continues to rage over whether or not I am related to the Wynn Oil Company people, I'd like to make a more important point.
Point!
Wynn's products do keep cars going strong. This was proven conclusively last Memorial Day at Indianapolis. The cars that finished first, second, and third all used Wynns.
Wynns!
But what about everyday driving? In hot weather, weekend and vacation trips, use Wynn's new Charge.
Charge!
A can of Charge in your crankcase ensures full engine compression, prevents oil burning, and gives your car total power.
Power!
Switch to Charge and keep your car going strong. Wherever you get gas or service, ask for Charge. Made by Wynn's.
No relation.
Of Azusa.
No relation.
Now a Monitor News special. A National Black Power Unity Conference in Newark was disrupted this afternoon by an angry band of militants. The immediate target of the hit-run attack were newsmen covering a news conference called by convention leaders. The attackers singled out Negro newsmen and radio and TV equipment. Lem Tucker, an NBC correspondent who is himself a Negro, has been covering the Newark conference. Lem, could you tell us just what happened?
Well, about 10 minutes after the Black Power afternoon press briefing began, about 25 young black militants could be heard coming down the hall, a great deal of ruckus. Suddenly they broke into the room hollering, "Let's get them." Their immediate target, of course, was the TV cameras and radio equipment. And I heard one cry of, "Let's get the white power press," which seems to be a cry here. Most of us ran, frankly. We jumped through windows. We ran through doors. As the militants took their clubs and beat on TV equipment, most of which, at least initially, appeared to be put out of commission.
Lem, could you tell us why this happened?
Well, I think it happened primarily because the black militants, the most militant elements, wanted to show their strength. And amazingly, they do have more strength than a lot of people would think. Last night, they sort of took control of the conference after fighting 2 days of the more moderate elements by passing several resolutions, one professing the inherent right of black men everywhere to revolt whenever they deem necessary, another calling for the city of Newark to release all the jail prisoners without bail, those that were jailed during the rebellion. This was sort of the final, or maybe the initial show of strength to show what they call the Uncle Toms, the conservatives, who they accuse of conducting a militant NAACP convention. One fellow said to me last night, "This meeting's a farce." He said, "These cats think they're militant, and brother, they don't know what militancy is, but we'll show them before it's over." And I guess that's partly why it happened.
Well, Lem, just who are these particular militants?
Well, who they are is sometimes difficult to really pinpoint. You have an element calling themselves the Mau Maus. You have an element of RAM, the Revolutionary Action Committee, some of whose members are under indictment in New York City for trying to kill Roy Wilkins. You have other elements. You've got colorful African costumes. You've got people carrying clubs. You've got some the offshoot of some of Malcolm X's followers all here, but they're still, as much as they won't like to admit it or hear it, small groups. The thing that gives them their power is once they get together at a group like this, they find that they can shout, rant, and rave enough, and there are a lot of these what they call conservative cats who sort of jump on the bandwagon because their type of rhetoric is more acceptable to the moment, especially in a city like Newark.
What do you think they hope to achieve by this afternoon's tactics?
Again, I think they hope to show that they are the most militant. One of the things that we've seen here during the 3 days that we've been here is the fact that every speaker seems to try to be more militant than the next. Everybody wants to show that they are really the most militant element here. Hopefully, I think they feel, hopefully, by such demonstrations and being the most militant, they're going to get more followers. How they plan to use this to make up for the lack of planning and an economic base, I'm not quite sure.
All right, Lem, thank you very much. It was nice to get this live report on the scene. We'll be talking to you later if something else develops. Thank you, Len.
Bye now.
Len Tucker, NBC News correspondent, who narrowly escaped from an angry mob when it broke up a news conference of a Black Power convention in Newark. Monitor will bring you all and further developments on this and other news stories throughout the weekend.
Yes! Yes!
Your Oldsmobile dealer is saying yes during his annual YES, year-end sale.
Yes!
Year-end savings.
Now!
He's got the car for you. 36 youthfully styled models, more features than ever. Want a luxury car in the low price field? Cutlass Supreme.
Yes!
Live big, spend small.
Save!
Want an economical full-size car? He's got them. The all-new Delmont 88. Hardtops, convertibles, choice of rocket power.
Yes!
Lowest priced 88.
Save!
If you fancy something fancier, here's fine car elegance without paying the fine car price. Delta 88 Custom.
Now!
Luxurious interiors.
Wow!
See your Olds dealer, the Yes Man, for a great deal on a fabulous front-wheel drive Coronado or an elegant 98.
Yes!
Year-end sale.
Now!
Now, a listening reminder. Later today on Monitor, host Ted Steele will have as his guest bandleader Stan Kenton with some observations on modern trends in music. A four-year-old child prodigy who learned to read at the age of 18 months. One of the country's top rodeo bronco riders. And a man who runs a computer service to help college graduates find jobs. Plus regulars, Joe Garagiola, Mel Allen, and Dr. Joyce Brothers. And lots of listenable music. So be sure to listen later today on Monitor.
That covers the club dues. Now let's hear from Al Bixby on entertainment. Al? Al? Al?
When you can't afford to be dull, sharpen your wits with No-Doze. No-Doze Keep Alert tablets or new chewable mints, safe as coffee, help you become more naturally alert to people and conditions around you.
Sharpen your wits with No-Doze. No-Doze keeps you alert.
This is Monitor 67. I'm your host, Ed McMahon. We're nationwide, you know, serving Central Florida in the heart of the World Citrus Center is WLAK Lakeland, Florida. Hello, Lakeland. Now roll call time for all our NBC stations, and we'll be right back.
Monitor keeping pace with people and events the world over on the NBC Radio Network.
This is Ed McMahon for Monitor 67, with a half hour coming up that includes Robert Goulet, Barbara Streisand, Reuben Mitchell, a report from Moscow on an international film festival, and complete sports coverage by Mel Allen. Right now, here's Andy Russell. It's such a pretty world today.
It's such a pretty world today.
Look at the sunshine.
Look at the sunshine.
And every day's the same since I met you.
It's such a pretty world today.
Knowing that you're mine.
Knowing that you're mine.
And happiness at the sunshine.
Look at the sunshine.
Today and every day since I met you. And though the rain may fall, our skies will all be blue. The sunshine.
Look at the sunshine.
Today and every day since I met you.
Since I met you.
Today and every day since I met you.
Next, Monitors Ring Around the World, a weekend series of close-ups on people and events in this country and abroad, brought to you by your American Motors Rambler dealer, now featuring Surprise Time. An international film festival, including entries from the United States, has been held in Moscow. A report from Kenneth Bernstein, NBC News, Moscow, in just 1 minute.
Hey, Mr. American Motors Rambler dealer, you the guy who sells the U.S. compact at an import price?
That's me. Surprise?
Yeah, but I'm really interested in your surprise deals on a bigger car like the 1967 Rebel.
That's no surprise. Everybody is. Here, put on this elaborate hat with the funny horns.
Ooh, not so tight.
It's a little invention. Every time you register surprise, your brain impulses make the horns honk.
Yes, son of a gun.
Now, look at this 1967 Rebel.
Okay.
See? Surprised already.
Is this a Rebel?
Right. We call it the excitement machine.
Yeah.
Lots of options. Four on the floor, bucket seats, 343 cubes. Tom McCahill of Mechanics Illustrated says there isn't a better intermediate-sized car sold in the U.S. than the 1967 Rebel. Hey, take off the hat.
Boy, am I surprised. I'll take it.
The Rebel?
The hat.
Oh.
And the Rebel. Surprise?
No, Rebels outsell the hats 5-1.
Surprise time is a good time to get your kind of deal on your kind of car at your American Motors Rambler dealer.
Now, Kenneth Bernstein, NBC News, Moscow.
The way TASS, the official Soviet news agency, looked at it, the Moscow Film Festival, which wound up this week, was a great success for the communist bloc. No wonder. Films from East Europe won most of the prizes. This came as no surprise, since the official jury happened to have a majority from socialist countries. For the first time, there was a tie between a Soviet film and a Hungarian film for first place. The Soviet movie, called Journalist, was notable for its extreme length and the fact that one major role showed an American in a more or less friendly way. Both winning pictures emphasized the theme of the individual's responsibility to society, an ideologically approved moral. While the Russians were patting themselves on the back for the jury's wisdom, the Americans were sounding pleased as well. Hollywood sent a high-powered delegation and spent a reported $200,000 to make some impact in Moscow. The payoff may not have been in sales, but it is a fact that 11 American movies were seen here in 2 weeks. The star of the official American entry, Sandy Dennis, won the prize for Best Actress. American director Fred Zinnemann won a special prize for his creative work, and an American short subject won a medal. After a murmur of controversy, only two of the films the American delegation brought along failed to see the light of day. One was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, whose shocking subtitles rattled the Russian censors. The other banned item was called The Young Americans, and it's reported the Russians gave it the red light because it was deemed to be pro-American propaganda. Ironically, the official American entry, Up the Down Staircase, drew displeasure from the State Department because it shows a negative aspect of American life. State opposes the movie's export to Eastern Europe, but it scored well at the Moscow Festival. The Russians say the two-week festival here may have lacked the hoopla and the bikinis usually associated with movie competitions elsewhere, but they think it was a success. From another angle, so do the Americans. Kenneth Bernstein, NBC News, Moscow.
Ring Around the World, another in our weekend series of close-ups on people and events in this and other countries. This report has also been brought to you by Martinizing Dry Cleaning. Brand new clothes certainly can give a person a lift. Of course, you can't buy a new suit or a new dress every time you go out, but you can feel like it in clothes freshly dry cleaned by one-hour martinizing. It's the modern method, safe, gentle, thorough, that refreshes and renews clothing in just 1 hour, yet cost you no more. Try one-hour martinizing.
Your clothes will be cleaner, brighter, stay fresh longer. Be off to a fresh start with one-hour martinizing, dry cleaning.
Monitor music now. Here's Barbara Streisand with Stout-Hearted Men.
You who have dreams, if you act, they will come true. To turn your dreams to a fact, it's up to you. If you have the soul and the spirit, never fear it, you'll see it through. Hearts can inspire other hearts with their fire, for the strong obey when a strong man shows them the way. Give me some men who are stout-hearted men, who will fight for the right they adore. Start me with 10 who are stout-hearted men, and I'll soon give you 10,000 more. Shoulder to shoulder, and bolder and bolder, they grow as they go to the fore.
This is Monitor 67. Just ahead, Mel Allen will bring us all the latest news from the world of sports. So stay right here. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York. You've probably heard Hugh Downs on Monitor Radio tell you about a special summer hearing aid value. Right now, Zenith is introducing a new tiny hearing aid, the Carlisle. It's the smallest, slimmest eyeglass hearing aid Zenith has ever made. So slender, it's hard to believe there's a quality Zenith hearing aid in the Temple Bar. And you can probably use your present eyeglass frame fronts. So let Better Hearing of Hempstead, 12 North Franklin Street in Hempstead, Nassau County, New York, show you how inconspicuous a hearing aid can be. But do it now, because for a limited time only, they're offering a special introductory price on this tiny new Carlisle. And while you're there, see any of the other 18 Zenith Living Sound hearing aids. Now's the time to visit Better Hearing of Hempstead, 12 North Franklin Street, Hempstead, New York, while the sounds of summer are on sale. You'll be glad you did.
Ed McMahon here for Monitor 67, with the up-to-date sound of what's new in the weekend world. Music now, the big voice of Robert Goulet, The Sinner.
With remorse and regret, I stand before you. Please forgive and forget, I implore you. Though I've sinned in the past, bless me. Give me love, love that will last, love that will bless me. I'm not worthy, I know, but I found courage today. Be sweet. Take my heart there at your feet. You could save me if you gave me just one sign that you care. Tell this sinner you care. Please be kind when I make my sad confession. In my soul, each mistake left its impression. So let both leave behind bitter resentments. In your eyes, let me find peace and contentment. You care. Tell this sinner you care. Tell this sinner you care.
At the Monitor Sports Desk now, Mel Allen in person.
Thank you very much, Ed. Hello there, everybody. Handsome Boy beat back Buck Passer's bid to become the fourth horse to win the Handicap Triple Crown at Aqueduct today in the $100,000 added Brooklyn Handicap. Under 116 pounds, Handsome Boy took the lead near the start, won by six lengths, as Buck Passer's impost of 136 pounds proved too much. Time for the mile and a quarter, 2 minutes, one-fifth of a second. Mr. Wright was third in the five-horse field. Now, baseball results. Completed games only in the American League, the Boston Red Sox won their eighth in a row, shutting out Cleveland 4-0. It was also Boston's 10th win in their last 11 games as they drive toward first. Lee Stang, the winning pitcher, Steve Hargan, the loser. Carl Yastrzemski hit his 23rd homer. Mike Andrews also homered for the Red Sox. And Detroit knocked off the New York Yankees 11-4, the Yanks' sixth straight loss. Earl Wilson, the winning pitcher. Fred Talbot, the loser. Home runs for Detroit, Willie Horton and Norm Cash. That was a grand slammer. And for the Yankees, Mickey Mantle, number 18 for the year, and Steve Whitaker. Over in the National League, Pittsburgh slaughtered Houston 15-2 as Woody Freeman beat Bo Belinsky. Homers by Manny Mota, Roberto Clemente, Bill Mazeroski. All for the Pirates. Joe Morgan for the Astros. And the Chicago Cubs beat the San Francisco Giants 6-5. Elsewhere in baseball, an examination revealed today that Hall of Famer Jimmy Fox, who died last night at the age of 59, choked to death on a piece of meat he was eating at supper time. Funeral services for the great slugger who hit 534 career homers will be Tuesday morning in Miami. A deal. The New York Mets shipped third baseman Ken Boyer to the Chicago White Sox for an undisclosed amount of cash. A minor league utility player, Billy Southworth, who will report to the Mets' Williamsport, Pennsylvania farm in the Eastern League. The teams announced also they plan to trade major league players by December 1st. As part of the deal, no names revealed. And Harry Walker, recently deposed manager of the Pirates, signed today by the Houston Astros as a batting coach. Unbeaten Joe Frazier moved front and center into the heavyweight title picture this week, stopping Canada's George Schiavello. Who's next for Frazier? Well, Monitor reporter Dan Grable asked his manager, Yancey Yank Durham.
Yank, who would you like to see Joe Frazier fight next?
Would I like to fight Carl Millenberger? Jerry Quarry.
Jerry Quarry. Now, he fought Floyd Patterson to a draw. Do you think he's much competition?
Well, Quarry's an improved fighter. I've been watching Quarry for the last 18 months, and he's a very good boy. I like the kid a good deal. And I'd like to see he and Joe fight. And I think we do business in the West, on the West Coast, more so than the East, because not too many people in the East seen Jerry Querry lately.
Dan Grable for Monitor Sports.
Swimmer Don Scholander, quadruple Olympic gold medalist, was named today to carry the stars and stripes during the opening ceremonies of the 5th Pan American Games in Winnipeg tomorrow. Behind him will march the best-dressed United States team in history. Well, almost. Although our 402-member team has been provided with everything from underwear to pale blue pajamas and matching robe, American girl athletes have a complaint. Their clothes are all knee-length. In these days, what young female wants to wear anything less than a miniskirt? But knee-length is the way it'll be tomorrow. Que sera, sera, Ed. And that's the late sports news. Mel Allen here, reminding you that for more features and news from the world of sports, stay tuned to Monitor.
Thank you, Mel. Incidentally, Mel and the other members of the Monitor sports team have now been joined by Sandy Koufax. You'll hear Sandy doing lively, informative interviews with sports celebrities all over the country. More Monitor music, this one from a group with the whimsical name of the Doodletown Pipers, a summer song.
Showing up the pretty leaves as we walk on.
This is Coppertone's Hollywood correspondent, Armie Archer, visiting Sharon Tate, exciting co-star of the Martin Ransohoff film, Don't Make Waves. But you do make them in the picture, Sharon. Great big ones.
Yes, but pretty gay ones, wouldn't you say, Armie?
That I would. Fast-moving, sophisticated, Don't Make Waves is very funny. And best of all, seeing you on a surfboard, Sharon, is worth the price of admission.
Why, thank you, sir. I love being out in the sun.
And when someone asks how you get such a terrific tan?
Well, I tell them, join the Tannables. Use Coppertone. It really gives you a better tan.
Smart girl. Coppertone is enriched with moisturizers that make your skin more tannable. Keep it satiny smooth.
There's nothing like it. I agree when Vic Damone sings.
Get the fastest tan that anyone can. Tan don't burn, get a Coppertone tan.
A Coppertone tan really brings out the best in a girl.
Sharon Tate, you took the words right out of my mouth.
Mitchell at the keyboard, lips and legs. You've been listening to Monitor 67. I'm your host, Ed McMahon, reminding you that NBC News on the Hour is coming up shortly.
Me too, the latest news now is on the air. Keep tuned for sports and views now from everywhere. From NBC.
Maybe your grandfather will remember an old song on a Saturday night. He may also remember when he danced on Saturday night at Roseland. Well, it's a little different today. Now they dance on Saturday afternoon, too. Dedicated dance lovers who can't make it in the evening indulge their love of dancing at the Saturday matinee from 1:45 to 6 p.m. The usual Saturday night soiree begins at 8. On Sunday, dancing is continuous all day from 3:30 p.m. But no matter when you come to Roseland Dance City for the first time, the reaction is the same. You walk into a sensationally spacious ballroom that must stop you in your tracks. You glide out onto the largest, smoothest dance floor you have ever seen and dance to the finest dance music in the land. That's the ticket at Roseland, and that ticket is only $2 complete. Incidentally, restaurant and bar prices are surprisingly modest. Today, tonight, tomorrow, take your mate or date for your dancing delight to Roseland Dance City on 52nd Street, just west of Broadway.